Good morning. Two weeks ago, six high school youth and four adults from All Souls headed to Walk Paula on the Standing Rock Reservation in South Dakota. We were joined by four other youth groups and adults from parishes in the East Bay, and we went to do service work with the Lakota on the Standing Rock Reservation. We did things like patching roofs and expanding and clearing cemeteries and steeple painting and porch replacement at St. Elizabeth's, the church that we were staying at, the church that Bill Fay served at many years ago. And we offered vacation Bible school to the kids in Walk Paula. Our theme this year was We All Have a Story to Tell, the idea being that we build community and relationships by telling our stories and by creating shared stories through shared experience. We tell our story of our faith every Sunday in our Eucharist and our liturgy. And so we went to tell our own stories and to create stories together. And one of the things that we did to start our trip was listen to the Sherman Alexie's book, The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. We listened to that in the car on the way from Cheyenne, where we spent our first night, to Walk Paula. And I'd read that book a month ago to prepare. And it left me feeling really discouraged about what is happening on the reservations, what is happening in the United States, and how we engage or don't engage Native Americans and the poverty and the alcoholism. And it's hard there. And I was not really sure what we were going to find and how we were going to see God, if we were going to see God, in the midst of that extreme struggle and suffering. And yet, as God often does, I was surprised by God, by Him. I saw God in the generosity and hospitality of the Lakota people. They fed us every night. They offered us presentations through drumming circles and talks about their traditional food and their creation story and other religious or spiritual traditions. I saw God in their humor. They bring humor to all situations in every place. They are full of humor. I saw God in their teaching and patience as they worked with us, as they taught some of our youth how to build fences, and as they taught us how to smudge using sage as we left the cemeteries every afternoon. I also saw God in our group of youth, who some of them knew one another, some of them had never been on these trips, had never met the other youth before, and by the end of our trip, we were one community. We were a community of close friends and inside jokes and laughter and support and encouragement, and it was really beautiful to watch. And as I have prepared for this morning, I was struck by the references in, I think, almost all of our readings this morning about the lost and forgotten and rejected people. And those are the people that we went to serve and be in community with. And we have a lot of work to do to bring justice to this world. But I am encouraged by the psalm, the first line in the psalm, "Oh, how good and pleasant it is when brethren live together in unity." And I watched our youth doing that together, and I watched us doing it within the Lakota community, and I'm excited for the relationships that we started or renewed this past trip and that will continue to be strengthened as our youth go back and are moved and inspired to continue working for God's justice. So I'm going to stop talking and invite the five youth who are here today Margaret and Julia and Davis and Paige and Riley to share their stories. We asked them a few times on the trip where they saw God, and they are here this morning to share with you how they experienced God on this trip. So without further ado, Margaret, will you come up?
Hello. In today's gospel, Jesus acts very unusually. A Canaanite woman asks him for help in her time of need, and he very coldly refuses her. He even goes as far as to call her a dog. And it is only in her persistence that Jesus is persuaded to help this woman. And after all of her begging, all Jesus has to do is to say a few words, and her daughter is healed. Our first day in Standing Rock, our South Dakota group was split into smaller work groups. Each group went to a different work site every day until we reconvened in the afternoon. I worked in the Vacation Bible School group, which I loved because I got to interact with the reservation kids and build connections with them. I definitely saw God in their consistent joy and optimism. Like most kids, they enjoyed running around and tiring us out by playing musical chairs, hide and seek, catch, and basketball. But unlike most kids, these children face the harsh realities that come from poverty. When the VBS group ran our first day of the program, we offered these kids snack, and no one refused. Their innocent, youthful laughter was silenced as soon as they saw food, and each child asked for more as soon as they were finished. When some were denied seconds, their eyes were filled with an indescribable disappointment that really touched my heart. The next day, our VBS group decided to offer more than just snacks and instead full lunches to these kids. And when lunchtime came, they had the same reaction. Almost all kids savored each bite and after finishing, asked for seconds. And when one girl cried because there wasn't enough for her, she told me, in her words, that it wasn't for now, it was for me to eat later. These kids are severely in need, as are many of the people living on the reservation. They are troubled, like this Canaanite woman from today's gospel, except for the people of Standing Rock. Persistence has not gotten them the help that they need. So many of our local relief efforts and government relief projects are aimed to relieve other countries, whether it be for a natural disaster or a war-torn country or a poverty-stricken one. However, many of us forget that there are problems existing in our own country. The Native Americans need just as much help as those that we help every day, that those programs help in other countries. In many ways, our government's treatment toward the Native Americans are similar to the crumbs that fall from the master's table that the Canaanite woman describes to Jesus, because they do not even have enough to buy food. Now, when looking at this giant problem, my first reaction, as I'm sure many other people would react, is how could I possibly help? I am one person, and this is impossible. However, even the smallest action can provide big results. Just as Jesus said only a few words to heal this Canaanite woman's daughter, we too can do something as simple as saying a few words, whether that is in prayer or by telling someone else's story.
It was the second or third day of roofing, and a group of Lakota kids, most of them around 7 years old, climbed the ladder up to the roof we were working on that day. Some with the intention of actually helping, and others just wanting to run around on top of someone's house with a razor-sharp knife in either hand. One Lakota girl named Savannah approached me while I was working and asked if she could wear the straw hat that I had on at the time. Let me backtrack a couple of days to our first night on the reservation, when Father Rob was talking to us about the history of Standing Rock and telling us a little bit about Lakota culture. Addressing mainly those of us who would be working with the Vacation Bible School, Father Rob warned that the Lakota concept of borrowing was drastically different from ours, that is, when they give, they do not expect anything in return. And once you give something to a Lakota kid, you should not expect or ask for it back. So, back on the roof, with this information in mind, I turned to Savannah and, handing my hat to her, said, "Yes, but only if you give it back before you leave." Slightly cautiously or unsure of myself, as if I were afraid that she would become angry at the thought of such an absurd request. I was relieved when I saw that she was not angry, but at the same time, resigned as I watched her run away, hat on head, without answering me, knowing that I might not get it back. However, a few minutes later, Savannah returned, thanked me for letting her wear my hat, and gave it back. I bring this story up not to prove Father Rob wrong, or try to contradict him in some sort of combative way, but because I was amazed that Savannah, having been asked to do something that she had probably never been asked to do before, did not become irritated, but decided to do her best to understand what I was asking of her and comply with my wishes. In today's reading from Genesis, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers as the one whom they sold into Egypt. Rather than lashing out at his brothers, which it is safe to assume they expected, Joseph forgives them, saying that it was God's will that he should end up in Egypt, and not them, but God who sent him there. He was able to forgive them in this way, only because he understood what God meant for him to do. Both of these stories present situations in which it would have been perfectly understandable for someone to become angry, but in neither situation do they do so. Instead, both Savannah and Joseph decided to try and understand what was being asked of them, by me in the case of Savannah, and by God in the case of Joseph. So, what God is calling us to do today is to be a little more like Savannah and Joseph, and when something is asked of us that we might initially think to be a little odd, or maybe even rude, to set aside the boundaries that our cultures have set for us and try to understand the reason behind what is being asked of us.
I went to South Dakota 3 years ago, the last time All Souls participated in the immersion trip on the Standing Rock Reservation. Because I had been before, I was especially excited to see how things had changed since the last time I had come. But to be perfectly honest, things were very much as they had been. I saw just as much hospitality from the women who cooked as I did before, and the same vast expanse of fields. I saw the adorable, excited children as I had before, but also how there were still many places that need a lot of work and help. The work site that I primarily worked on also had a frustrating undertone of weak endurance and longevity. The steeple that I was painting was the exact same steeple that our church group had painted just 4 years ago and would undoubtedly need repainting soon enough. A resonating phrase that I heard Phil say about Standing Rock Reservation went along the lines of, "There's always more work to be done." Going to the reservation is a humbling experience. The Lakota live much more simply than I do and lack the vast amount of resources that are readily available to me. When I was talking to Phil about my sermon in the car ride back to the Denver airport, we began discussing the difficult lives people lead on the reservation. Unemployment rates, death rates, and substance abuse and addiction rates are all generally higher on the reservation than not, and teen suicide rates are double the rate of any other teen demographic in the United States. Despite these problems, the media does not tend to publicize issues of the reservation, putting it on the sidelines to focus on other aspects of American life. This deserting behavior is not a new trend either. There are plenty of instances in American history in which white powers have ignored the needs of Indians in favor of what benefited the rest of white America. The Trail of Tears forced Cherokee Indians out of the Southwest to move to Oklahoma to make space for white people to live. And the Dawes Act of 1887 attempted to assimilate Indians into white culture and end tribal life by making Indians own land individually instead of as a whole tribe, shoving aside the needs and philosophies of the Indian people. Still today, many Americans remain clueless or, perhaps worse, aware of the troubles of reservation life, but do nothing to make it better. Today's gospel is particularly interesting because it presents a flawed view of Jesus. When a Canaanite woman came to him and to ask for help, Jesus ignores her, saying that he is only in the area to help the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Jesus even insults the woman, saying that it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs, implying that the Israelites, the chosen people, were the only people who deserved his time and care, even though he was now aware of the Canaanite woman's problems. The woman then responds by saying that even the dogs get the scraps of the table, and Jesus finally decides to help her. This gospel calls into question what it takes to get Jesus' attention. Although Jesus is known to help the marginalized, he ignores the needs of a sidelined group in favor of another, and this reminds me of the situation that the majority of America has with the Indians. Both as a whole country and as individuals, we have acted like Jesus and not in a good way. Shoving aside the needs and issues of Indians is not an act of which Americans are innocent. However, the ending of the gospel story provides a glimmer of hope. Jesus eventually turns around and changes his attitude when he is faced with the Canaanite woman's words. In the past and the present, we too have treated Indian people like Jesus initially treated the Canaanite woman. In the coming days and in the grander future, how can we change our response to and our attitude towards marginalized groups and troubled situations, and finally take responsibility for all who need help?
This was my first mission trip, and I honestly had no idea what to expect. All I knew is that we were going to be doing some construction type work and helping out with the kids' summer program. These two things turned out to, yes, be true, and also end up being a really great experience. Definitely one of the most apparent places I saw God was in both the communities I spent 10 days with, the youth and adults from the churches around the Bay Area and the people on the Walk Paul Reservation. I knew around maybe 3 or 4 people at the most, which is what made me most nervous about going. My friend was planning to come on the trip with me, but got very sick the night before and couldn't make it. This, of course, bummed me out a lot, but over time I got to talk to and make friends with a lot of different people. We all had different jobs that we got to choose once we got to the reservation, and mine was to help lead a vacation Bible school for a few days with a couple other people, including Margaret, down at the community center in Walk Paula. One of the first days we were there, we had to walk around the neighborhood and hand out flyers to people's homes, inviting their children to VBS. One of the saddest parts of the trip had to be the amount of limping dogs that followed us to each house, expecting food from us, that were so skinny you could even see their ribs. The whole experience that day was very eye-opening. What I saw God in were the children that came to VBS the next few days. They were so full of life and energy, and you could just tell the amount of excitement they had in them to be there and play with us. It was also a lot of fun getting to be with the kids and be in the community and just see what it was all like. I also saw God in the community of people I got to spend my time with for the last week and a half. Everyone was extremely caring and friendly, and everyone bonded really well together, and it was time well spent. I got very close to a lot of people on the trip, and I'm grateful that the trip turned out so well. I saw God in the Walk Paula people and how open-minded they were during the time they spent with us and in their culture, and how willing they were to be with us and talk to us and share their stories.
We sat down, and the white-bearded, pipe-smoking, sage-burning, camouflage-wearing Father Rob told us, "This is not America." And basically, he was right. This was not America, at least not the one I knew. I'd been to the res 3 years prior, but even so, for a boy who since then spent his days as a high school kid amidst the bustling activity of the opulent urban cities of the Bay Area, returning for a week to the isolated green plains of Standing Rock, where rattlesnakes roam, where grasshoppers are the size of my fist, and where a marginalized people make their humble home, was a sure change. As the poet W.B. Yeats aptly said, "There is another world, but it is in this one." Indeed, another world. The reservation is a land plagued with poverty, alcohol, suicide, and more. But it's also, as Sherman Alexie says in his book, green and golden and perfect, full of music, humor, and stories. I see Joseph's story as one of reunion, absorbing, enduring, and coming to terms with the past pain of hardship and betrayal, yet rejoicing in the present moment. 11 brothers, scared, sad, and starving, suddenly embraced and forgiven by Joseph, the man they'd least expected to see. A reunion that surprisingly isn't bitter or painful, rather a joyous welcome home, even in a land far from geographical home. In the same way, I felt welcomed home in South Dakota. It was a big, joyous reunion. There were all kinds of reunions that took place, even those of which we weren't a direct part. For instance, a housebound woman named Marilyn, whose roof we fixed, finally was able to install electricity, and for the first time in 5 years, was reunited with her family when they came over for dinner in the light of her own home. Further reunions took place in the fact that we were Lakota and Wyshichu alike. Wyshichu, for those of you who don't know, means white person, literally translates as those who take the fat. Enjoying each other's presence in the moments we shared together. The passionate games of Three Flies Up, the earnest invitations to some place in Mobridge called Scarecrow Hollow, sitting atop the bell tower giving each other funny names, the basketball games, the jokes told, the stories told, the music played, the dances danced, the supper so graciously prepared and received. That welcome I got, the feeling of home, far from home, that invitation to experience a separate world, yet within my own, was the meat of the trip. It felt like family. It felt like brotherhood. Sure, I did some actual work. I shouldered the shingles up rickety ladders. I helped patch soggy roofs. I cleared the waist-high grass from graves. And that was important, too. But that stuff comes second to just simply being there, together, acknowledging the pain, but also acknowledging the unity. The powwows, the Indian names, the artwork. Yes, this is all part of a beautiful culture that I respect and admire. But it is, as Emmett Buddy Martin, the ex-alcoholic teacher at Sitting Bull College, might say, superficial, spelled with an S-I-O-U-X. To me, words that really and deeply define the Lakota are storytellers, humble listeners, and welcomers to all. Hopefully, those words will also describe me someday.